Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at OffbeatOregon.com, and this is the Daily Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Thanks for downloading, and I sure hope you enjoy the show today. This story was first published on March 1st of 2021 under the headline, Locals Drawn Into 1930's Most Notorious Murder. This is part one of a two-part presentation of this story. Part two will be coming tomorrow. Here we go. Oregon divorcee Agnes Ann Annie Leroy arrived in Phoenix in the first few months of 1931 with her best friend and roommate, schoolteacher Hedvig Sammy Samuelson. They were climate refugees. Sammy had tuberculosis, and at the time, the only cure for consumption was a dry climate and rest. Back then, many patients with TB waited until they were so far gone that the climate couldn't save them. Essentially, they moved to Arizona to die. Sammy wasn't one of them. Her case was mild. But although she didn't know it, she too was moving to Arizona to die. She had less than 9 months to live. So did Annie. Neither one of them would die of tuberculosis, though. When the First World War broke out, Dr. William Craig Judd was in his early 30s, a fresh-faced young physician, the scion of a prominent Salem family, and a recent graduate of the Willamette University College of Medicine. When the U.S. joined the fighting a few years later, naturally, he wasted little time rallying to the colors. Commissioned a first lieutenant, he was soon in France patching up doughboys on the front lines. Doctors in the Great War didn't face off with the enemy over no man's land or swarm over the top in bayonet charges, but nobody in the trenches was safe from the number one killer of the war, artillery shells. And in 1918, a German shell flew through the air with young Lieutenant Judd's name on it. The wounds the shell inflicted were very painful, so Lieutenant Judd found relief from his suffering the way many Great War soldiers did, from morphine. But unlike the other soldiers, nobody forced him to stop taking the stuff after his wounds healed. Like Hugh Laurie's character in the 2010's Fox Network TV show House MD, as a licensed physician, Dr. Judd was fully empowered to prescribe himself anything he pleased. And so it was that Dr. William Judd mustered out of the army with the monkey of morphine addiction clinging tightly to his back. Unlike Dr. House's, though, Dr. William's career did not prosper. He drifted from position to position, dropping lower on the physician's pecking order with each move. But on his way down the medical hierarchy, he took a position at the Indiana State Hospital, where he met a vivacious 17-year-old blonde hospital orderly named Winnie Ruth McKinnell, the daughter of a local Methodist minister. Despite being more than twice her age, he fell hard for her, and she for him. Soon they were married, and when Dr. William found it necessary to move on from Indiana, she accompanied him. The couple ended up in Mexico, where Dr. William found a job as a company doctor at a copper mine. It was a hard life, and not at all what the new Mrs. Judd had been expecting. Winnie, who went by her middle name Ruth, was vivacious and outgoing, but she was very slender, less than 120 pounds soaking wet, and not very robust. She suffered two miscarriages in Mexico, which devastated her. She'd very much wanted a baby. Then Ruth caught tuberculosis. Dr. William sent her to convalesce at a facility in California, and she seemed to get better, but when she rejoined him in Mexico, it flared up again. She tried several more times, but by this time Dr. William had lost his copper mine job and was basically blowing around Mexico from village to village. She couldn't survive the lifestyle, so she returned to the States in 1930 and settled down in Phoenix, taking a job as a governess in wealthy plutocrat Lee Ford's family home. A wealthy lumberman named Happy Jack Halloran lived next door to the Fords with his wife and several children. Happy Jack, a notorious philanderer, soon noticed the pretty blonde governess and moved in on her. The legendary Happy Jack charm worked as advertised. A few weeks or months later, the two of them were embroiled in a secret affair. A few more months went by, and Ruth left the Fords' employ. Possibly they found out about her nocturnal rendezvous with their neighbor, and took a job as a medical secretary at the Grunau Clinic. The job paid fairly well. well enough to pay for a small place of her own with a little left over to send off to help out Dr. William, who had checked himself into a drug rehab facility in California. At the clinic, Ruth quickly made friends. Soon she was spending a lot of time with two of her clinic co-workers, a 32-year-old x-ray technician and a 24-year-old orderly who had just moved to town earlier that year and taken jobs at the clinic. Their names, as you've probably guessed, were Annie LeRoy and Sammy Samuelson. Ruth's friendship with Annie and Sammy started out strong, but there was a problem in their relationship right from the start, and that problem's name was Happy Jack Halloran, Ruth Judd's Playboy side piece. Whether Ruth introduced the girls to him or whether they met him in some other way, he was far too much of a hound not to make a move on them, and none of the girls was overmuch pleased at the prospect of sharing him. The tensions came to a head on October 16th of 1931. That night, Ruth had been invited to come play bridge with Annie and Sammy, but she'd turned them down because she had a date with Happy Jack. But by 9 p.m. it was clear that Happy Jack was standing her up, so Ruth hopped on the trolley and headed for Annie and Sammy's place to see if they were still up for some bridge. When she arrived, she found her two friends loaded for bear. According to Ruth's later recollections, they were angry because she'd widened Happy Jack's extramarital dating pool by introducing him to a dishy coworker earlier in the day, a pretty single coworker who they happened to know or believe had syphilis. Annie and Sammy called Ruth a slut and threatened to tell Dr. William that his wife was sleeping around with the town wolfhound. She hit back by calling her hosts perverts. They were extremely close and lived together like sisters, which had been more than enough to start whispers of lesbianism making the rounds on the local rumor mill. Furious, Ruth stood up to go. She took her drink cup to drop it off in the kitchen sink, and when she got there, well, something happened. Something involving a kitchen knife, a Colt 25 automatic, and possibly another larger caliber pistol. Whatever it was, it resulted in Sammy getting stabbed once and shot three times in the shoulder, chest, and head. Annie shot at least once in the head, and Ruth shot in the left hand. Ruth found herself alone, wounded, in the kitchen with her two ex-friends dead on the floor. We'll talk about what Ruth did in the aftermath of this disaster tomorrow in part two of this story. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks again for listening. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. What you've been listening to is one of more than 700 stories originally created and published as newspaper columns in first-run syndication between 2008 and today. You can read them all at offbeatoregon.com. Other Offbeat Oregon goodies include an active Facebook page, a ton of historic photos, and a bunch more stuff, including visuals for today's show and full citations to sources, all accessible through our hub page at offbeatoregon.com. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and learn more at atlasstringband.com. Episodes of Offbeat Oregon History are uploaded around 6 a.m. every weekday, so the next one will be on your device and ready to go before you know it. Until then, go out and fill up the rest of the day with good stuff. Bye now.